I'm Amelia Muller-Schmidt, your host of In Conversation with Radio Laurier. Throughout the month of June and going forward, we feel it's very important to use our platform to amplify LGBTQ+ voices due to the fact that many major Pride events have been canceled. Have an interesting Pride-related story that you want to share? Send me an email at station.manager@radiolaurier.com. We'd love to hear from you. Happy Pride! In 2002, his world was taken by a media storm because he wanted to bring his boyfriend to prom. At the young age of 17, Mark Hall became an activist for the LGBTQ+ community as he fought the Durham Catholic School Board on their homophobic decision to not let him bring his date to prom. Now, fast forward almost two decades, Hall now has a made-for-TV film and a musical production based on his story. We sat down to chat with Mark about his story, the importance of celebrating Pride through this pandemic, and discussed the issues he still sees facing the LGBTQ+ community today. So let's get right into it. So for those of our listeners who don't fully know your story, can you explain to us the events of 2002 when you wanted to bring your boyfriend to prom?
Absolutely. It's so funny to think about because it was 18 years ago and, you know, it's still incredibly relevant today. So in 2002, I was in my grade 12 year at my high school, and basically I wanted to take my boyfriend to the prom. Mm-hmm. And when I had requested this from the school, they had said no. And subsequently the school board said that no, I couldn't take my boyfriend to the prom. And it turned into this incredible kind of media sensation, national news story. And I ended up taking the school board to court, and I won, and I was able to take my boyfriend to the prom.
Wow. That's an incredible story. I want to get more into what this media storm was like for you in a few questions. But
so, absolutely.
What was it like growing up as a gay teenager within the Catholic school board in the early 2000s?
Well, okay, so this is, yeah. So for me, it actually wasn't that bad, I guess you could say, because at my particular school, mm-hmm. both elementary and I would say high school too, most of the educators, especially even the religion teachers, were very liberal in their teachings. Oh, and so when we learned about things like homosexuality and things like that, it was usually more taught in terms of saying, everybody should be treated equally, and blah, 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 blah. They never, you know, said stuff like it's an abomination, blah, blah, blah. And so it was really, for me, there wasn't that much conflict when I was younger. And so, but as I was getting older, and this is one of the reasons why I was asking my school in the first place if it would be appropriate to take my boyfriend to the prom, because I felt comfortable asking them. Mm-hmm. Because on some level, you still know, homosexuality, Catholicism, I'm not sure if it's going to be taken great. So that's why I asked. And I actually had teachers at the beginning. I guess, you know, prom wasn't grade 12, but a lot of this stuff was happening at the beginning or at the end of grade 11. Because a lot of people were talking about, oh, no, you know, prom is next year, mm-hmm. And for me, I thought, oh, well, I'm sure they'll be fine with it. And I would talk to my English teacher about it because she was incredibly supportive. Mm-hmm. And she was like, oh, I don't think they have a problem either, but like, I can ask for you. Mm-hmm. And so I thought, oh, okay, yeah, might as well. Like, for sure. It's kind of like I thought they would say yes, but it was more like a respect thing, I guess you could say. Mm-hmm. It was at the end of grade 11, and I think she was asking, but she wasn't getting a response. And then like summer hit, so I kind of forgot about it because they didn't, again, really think it was going to be an issue. So then in grade 12, it was probably in January now, people started talking about the prom again. And I thought, mm-hmm. oh, well, I never actually got my answer. And so at this point, I started approaching the principal myself, and I noticed he was avoiding me. So when I would go to approach him in the hallways, he'd kind of just be like, oh, I'm busy. Mm-hmm. Come see me later. Or I'd go see him in his office and he'd be in a meeting, you know, things like that. Mm-hmm. And so first I was like, what's going on? And then eventually I was called down to the office randomly when I was in my grade 12 English class. So I've never been called down to the office, so everybody knew what this was about. And so when I went to see the principal that day, he sat me down and said that he's consulted with the school board. He knows that I want to ask him. And the answer is that no, they can't. I can't bring my boyfriend to the prom because that would be condoning homosexuality. And I they can't do that.
Wow.
So yeah, that's kind of how it began.
So a lot of the backlash, I guess, came at the more administrative level. So it sounds like what you're describing, the classrooms were quite supportive of you.
Yeah, so that's the thing. Yeah, so my school itself, I think, was very supportive. My teachers were supportive. Most of the peers were supportive. We did have, like, you know, the groups of homophobic. Mm-hmm. You could tell who the homophobic people were, but I mean, for the most part, most people were great. So again, yeah, like you mentioned, I think it was more at the admin level. And even the principal, like, you know, he was a nice person. I think he was just, I think he himself was caught in a rock and a hard place because he didn't know what to do. And fair enough, but the school board, yeah. You know, when we were in that meeting and he said no, I was literally so shell-shocked. Mm-hmm. And had no idea how to respond. And I don't even think I said two words in that meeting because I was like, what? Like, are you serious?
What did that feel like to you? Like, did that make you feel like you were doing something? Like, of course you weren't, but did it make you feel like you were in the wrong or in some way like that? Or did you automatically just feel an anger towards the administration?
I think for me, it didn't even start off as anger. It started off as just like hurt and rejection. And because when he said no, I was like flabbergasted, just like, are you serious? I can't take my boyfriend to the prom. Like, and in that moment, because I was so shocked, I didn't say anything. And so, you know, it was his idea that he said, you know, do you want to come? Because I think that meeting happened on like a Friday or something like that. And then he said, do you want to set up a meeting for your parents to come in and chat about it? And I was like, oh yeah, for sure. And so when I went home, I was like, you know, at this point, this is when I got angry. And I told my parents, like, this is what's happening. They said, no, that I can't bring them to prom. And my parents were like, what are you talking about? And they were angry and they agreed to go to the meeting with him. And I think, you know, my parents have always been incredibly supportive and I'm very fortunate in that way. I'm so grateful for that. And I think in their heads, they thought if they went to this meeting and they were okay with it, then everything would have been good, which was sweet. But yeah, it was the next week we went. And like this time I was prepared. I had like, I had like quotes from the Bible ready to go. I'm like, this whole speech like typed out and everything, right? And and so we sat down with my parents in the principal's office, and you know, it was pretty much the exact same thing. He reiterated the same thing to my parents that he said to me, and it was really a done deal. And then I remember at that point being very angry and just standing up and saying, you know, this is awful, and I like stormed out of the room, and I remember slamming the door and then walking up to the receptionist saying I needed to call my best friend to the front. And then Cassie Hood was my best friend during high school, and she came down to the front, and then my parents came out of the office and my mom was crying, and it was just it was so emotional. And
At what point does this go to the media?
Yes. So the next, oh my gosh, this is so funny to recount sometimes. So that meeting with my parents happened. And at that point, really, I thought, okay, well, what could I possibly do now? The principal and the school board said no, that's it kind of thing. But my friends in high school, again, they were amazing. And they saw how upset I was. They saw how upset my family was. You know, they thought this was totally, you know, unjust and everything, and they thought it was ridiculous. And so over that weekend, my friends had developed like a website, and this is like a 2002 website, super basic, just like
I can imagine.
Super basic, but it was called like voiceyouropinion.com or something like that. I can't remember exactly what it was, but basically they posted kind of like what was happening. They even put that like speech that I wrote up for the principal, for the meeting with the principal on the website. And we kind of just asked the general public, hey, you know, like, what do you think about what's happening? Do you agree or disagree with Mark or agree or disagree with the board? And so they surprised me on Monday with this website. And I thought it was incredible and so sweet and amazing. I felt very supported by my friends just from doing that website. And you know, we didn't really expect much, I guess you would say, right? We were getting like a decent amount of hits, I guess. And then all of a sudden, I don't even know how he came across it, but Chris Cecil was a radio show host in Windsor, Ontario, at the University of Windsor. Mm-hmm. And he somehow came across the website and he contacted us. So myself, my best friend, and then her boyfriend at the time, they were the ones that made the website. And so he contacted the three of us saying, hey, do you want to like chit chat over the radio about, you know, this whole situation? Like, I want to know more. And we were like, oh, okay. For me, to be honest, when I was 17, I was still not fully, you know, I was still figuring out myself. I was still figuring out my sexuality. I still wasn't totally comfortable. So when I heard like radio interview, I was like, oh my gosh, this sounds intense, but okay, you know, I'll try it and see how it goes. And it went awesome. Chris was very supportive. And, you know, we're just chatting about the situation at the at the end of the interview, he was like, okay, well, just FYI, I'm going to send out your website address to my contact list. I have no idea what that means. No idea. And I'm like, okay, yeah. And he's like, oh, yeah, there's about like 5,000 contacts on there. And I was like, okay, that's cool. Thank you very much. And then we hang up and then, you know, the three of us were super happy to have been able to do a radio interview. It went awesome. Again, didn't really think much was going to come from it. The next day, I was having dinner with my parents. It was 5:45, just before the 6 o'clock news. And Chris gives me a call saying, oh yeah, nice. You know, how old this story is, because he said put a tape in the VCR to record the news, right? And I was like, yes. What are you talking about? So sure enough, one of the first stories of the 6 o'clock news was about what was happening, and they were showing the clips of the website. They were showing screenshots of the website. They had like an interview with all the school board trustees.
Wow.
And then really that's when everything went a little wild. Mm-hmm. So I remember the next day I was at school and everybody was going out for lunch and I was grabbing my jacket from my locker and some friends had run up to me saying, have you looked outside yet? I'm like, what are you talking about? And they're like, just go to the front of the school and look at the front lobby. And I was like, what? Okay. I go to the front and all you could see outside the lobby windows was like this lineup of cameras, reporters, like scattered around everywhere, like news trucks with like the satellites on the back. And my initial instinct, I was terrified. Yeah. So my initial instinct was to run to the back of the school and hide in the classroom. So I was like, what? This is so intense. Like, no, I can't do it. And, but because it was lunchtime, a lot of the reporters went out to eat. And then there was only, I think it was one reporter was left. And so my friends came to find me. They were like, okay, well, there's like one person here from the radio. Like, why don't you just try it and see what it's like? And I was like, okay. So after like a pep talk, I went outside. I was doing the interview with them. And then while I was halfway through that interview is when all the reporters came back from lunch. And so basically,
stuck.
Yeah. So I was basically doing like this media scrum in front of the school. And this happened for at least 2 or 3 days. I remember at one point, like the bell rang and I had to go back to class. And I actually had to run away from a reporter because she was trying to, she's like, I haven't interviewed you yet. And I was like, I gotta go. And like,
wow. Gotta make it to math class.
Yeah, right. And honestly, it was so, you know, it was just the initial shock of everything that was happening. I was so nervous and everything, but really, you know, the media is supposed to be neutral, of course, fair enough, but you could tell like a lot of them were supportive in the way that they were asking me questions and stuff, and so yeah, it was great to be able to get the word out.
It sounds like initially obviously you were quite shocked by the response, but like did you feel a lot of pressure from the media throughout this case? Like, what were your reactions overall?
I think it was a lot of pressure because, you know, all of a sudden I was 17 years old.
Yeah.
And now, you know, after school, and I guess during school, during lunchtime, I'm doing media interviews. Eventually it turned into doing press conferences. Eventually it ended up going to, you know, like I was in the legislature, not the actual legislature, but like I was at Queen's Park, you know, doing interviews and then panel discussions and things like that, right? And Yeah, it got really, really intense. And there were some things that, so there was a documentary made about the whole experience and other things I'm sure we'll talk about soon.
Yes.
But some of the stuff that people don't know about is like the backlash that I was getting and that my family was getting. So at one point we received death threats. At one point we had to have, you know, the police staking out our house at nighttime. Yeah. Like, it was a lot of like hate mail, like in the mail and things like that. And that stuff was really intense to deal with. And I want to say that even though we had that kind of stuff, the support that I have was overwhelming and totally kind of shadows like what the negative was.
Mm-hmm.
Because once everything happened in the media, that's when people really started rallying together behind me and supporting me and my family. And it was just incredible. So we had, you know, PFLAG coming behind me. Yeah. We had the Canadian Auto Workers Union rallying together. We had different community groups around Oshawa and the Greater Toronto Area coming together. And, you know, a lot of people were... So what happened was, you know, after the school board said no, and after this was getting attention, people were saying, you know, there are school board meetings you can attend to kind of like argue your case, and hopefully the school board will change their minds.
Mm-hmm.
And so we found out, so we went to a school board meeting, but we didn't realize that you had to like officially apply to be on the agenda and like all this stuff. We thought you could just go and you know, state your case or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. But when we got there, I wasn't technically on the agenda, so they didn't even acknowledge that I was there. And we had a room full of supporters and people holding pride flags and all this stuff. But the first board meeting, they just completely didn't even acknowledge us, to the point where Mike Shields, who was the Canadian Auto Workers Union representative for the Oshawa chapter, stood up and basically was yelling at the board saying, you know, you have to listen to this young man. Like, we're taxpayers. Like, we can't discriminate against these people's children. Nah, 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 nah. And it was incredible. And so when Mike Shields really started speaking up and the board kind of retreated and said he has to be on the agenda. And so the following week or 2 weeks or whatever it was, we were on the agenda. There was five people, including myself, that were, you know, arguing for my side. And then three against, and that was really, honestly, kind of a waste of time, because we got on the agenda, we all prepared speeches, we thought it was going to be like a deliberation, like, here's the arguments, blah, blah, blah. And really it was, after all was said and done, the school board just had like this typed up response that they just gave right after everybody was done talking, and it was still a no.
Wow.
And so it was just, but the amount of support was ridiculous. It was like standing room only in that school board meeting. And like, I've been told typically there's only a few people in the audience for these things. And
that's fantastic. Yeah,
it was absolutely incredible.
Now, when you mentioned that your family was receiving quite a bit of backlash, how was the school? Were they supportive of you guys? Was your principal supportive, even though he initially said no? How did they handle it?
So the peers were supportive, but not, I couldn't, teachers themselves, I think, were stuck in a hard place because of their jobs. And so I can understand they were a little bit more, you could tell who was supportive, because some of them would actually, like at the end of the school day, I'd be walking in the hallways and some would like sneak me into the classroom and be like, what's going on now? And like, a lot of them were amazing, but they couldn't be outward with it, if that makes sense. And I totally understood, like, it was hard, but nothing from the principal, nothing from the school board, or things like that, but really the peers. And I know a lot of the teachers were very supportive. I remember actually one day it was a supply teacher in the class, and she realized that it was me, and she's just like, what is going on? I can't believe this is happening at this school.
Wow.
Like, what is happening? So I knew the support was there. It was awesome. It was amazing.
Now, just quickly going back to the media coverage, is it true there was a helicopter involved at some point?
Yeah. So this was after the court case.
Right.
And we were in the limo driving to the prom.
Wow.
And I remember just like sitting there with the window rolled down, just looking out, like taking everything in, being like, oh my God, like this is like the culmination of everything. This is outside. And I remember looking outside and there was a television helicopter following our limo and was actually like circling around the prom grounds for a little bit.
Too. Oh my God. What were your feelings in that limo when you were driving to prom successfully with your date?
I was proud. I was happy. It was a sense of justice was done because, mm-hmm. you know, after the school boards had said no, is when we pursued legal action.
Right.
But really when we pursued legal action, we had like a month until prom. And so we had to do what's called an interlocutory injunction, which is, you know, you need a decision about something with a limited time frame and limited evidence. And so it was really that month building our case. And in the end, we actually had 7 lawyers fighting on my side for free, which was incredible. And in the limo, all I could think about was, so our the week of the prom is when we took all of our evidence and presented it in court at an Ontario Superior Court. And so on Monday, we presented our side, which, you know, our two main arguments were, one, that my Section 15 charter rights were being violated, so mm-hmm. that you can't discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation.
Right.
And two, that because it's a publicly funded school, you can't discriminate against taxpayers' children in this way.
Mm-hmm.
And then the second day was the school board's arguments, which were mainly, you know, religious freedom, and because it's their school, I have to follow their rules. Mm-hmm. And so that was done over the 2 days. And then really on the Friday was the prom, and prom was at like, I don't know, 5 or 6 p.m. or something like that. And we got the decision at 3 p.m.
Wow.
And so it was really like, it was really down to the wire. And like I remember thinking about my living room, like the tuxes were like laid out on the couch and we were just kind of sitting there like, so are we going to be able to go? And then, and so when we got the decision around 3 o'clock, you know, we were just overjoyed and so thrilled, and it was incredible. But it was really like a rush now to be like, oh my God, now we do get to go to the prom. And so it was like,
so now you get to enjoy that prep going into the prom finally.
Right? Yeah.
Wow.
So we're throwing on the tuxedos, we're getting a limo ready.
Wow.
And then really was also, we left my house and then we went to a press conference that was done at the local chapter of the Auto Workers Union. They had a whole press thing lined up for me kind of like before going to prom.
Wow.
Which was incredible. And so then that's when we were driving to the prom, and that's when I saw the helicopter over top, and it was really just like, oh my God. I think it was hard to take it all in, but at the same mm-hmm. time I was like, wow, we won. Like, this is amazing.
That's incredible. And I can't believe all of this at 17. Now
Yeah.
Being so young and kind of being in a situation like this, you became an activist for the gay community at an early age. Did you ever feel like this was an overwhelming sense of responsibility? Like, did it ever feel like it was too much because it was all kind of thrown onto you so early on? Or how did that feel?
Absolutely. And so I always like to joke that I was an accidental activist, and not to diminish what happened or anything like that, but it really is. Again, I would say over and over again, I was 17 and there was so much pressure.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, there was really like a pivotal turning point because, I was dealing with all this media.
Mm-hmm.
It was, there was like these death threats and things like that. And even though the support was overwhelmingly positive, it was still so much to deal with. I was spending less and less time, at school or doing my work and
doing normal 17-year-old stuff.
Yeah,
I'm sure.
Yeah, exactly. Right. And so, and the pressure of like, I remember we were at Queen's Park and we were doing live interviews with this panel discussion, and I just mm-hmm. totally like broke down, like freaked out basically on live television mm-hmm. at that point because I was so scared and felt awful because of what was happening and everything like that. And so they were like definitely bad points.
Yeah.
And low points. But there was one kind of pivotal moment where it was one of my bad days. I think it might've been the day of the Queen's Park thing. But so I was at home and I got an anonymous phone call from a 13-year-old boy saying that he wasn't out to anybody yet. He was feeling scared and alone. And that the one thing that was giving him strength was following my news story in the media. Wow. And that was helping him. Oh my God, I get like emotional when I still talk about it.
It's powerful.
Yeah. And so we really like talked, I think, for about an hour, chatting about how, you know, like, things get better. People will support you. Coming out is, it's a whole process on its own. You have to do what's right for you and things like that. So it was a really good discussion. And kind of at the end, when we were hanging up the phone, he was like, "Thank you. You're my hero." And then he hangs up. And then I just cried. It was like, it was so intense and emotional. And I think it was at that point, like, originally I started off like, oh, I just want to take my boyfriend to the prom. And it kind of evolved into something that, or where I realized, you know, now I'm kind of fighting for a community and not just
yourself,
myself, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So it was that moment forward where I was like, okay, I'm definitely doing the right thing. Like, I can deal with all this stuff, right? So, yeah.
And some interesting things certainly came out of this. As you mentioned earlier, you have a film and a musical. So you have Prom Queen, the Mark Hall story, and Prom Queen, the musical. So based on your story and you, how did this come about? How did these opportunities come about? And tell us a bit about the process behind the film and the musical.
For sure. Yeah, it's been... there's still stuff happening today that has to do with the story, which is incredible. And so so in 2002, while everything was happening, there was actually a documentary being made at the exact same time, because when the news story broke in the media, a documentary producer, Larry Peloso, and his team were like, oh, we have to get on this story. And so it's actually on YouTube. It's called Prom Fight, the Mark Hall story. And it's actually them following me around to all this stuff. So I mentioned like the school board meeting and that documentary. It shows like the school board meeting and things like that. And it's about an hour. And yeah, it really is them following me around. And yeah, it's so I love watching it because, well, when it obviously takes me back, it's still emotional for me to watch, but I can see at the beginning, you could tell I'm kind of like this shy, more introverted, don't really know what's going on. Or you know what I mean? Don't know how I can deal with it. And then by the end, I'm more like poised, confident, like know that it's the right thing that I'm doing. And yeah, so yeah, I would definitely recommend the documentary if you're interested in this story. And then a couple years later, I was actually approached by 5 different companies, filmmaker producers, to do a made-for-TV movie.
Wow.
So I actually had to get like an entertainment lawyer and all this stuff to figure out who was the best fit. And so Mary Young Leckie was the producer for Prom Queen, the Mark Hall story, which came out in 2004. And so that was the first time we actually had, you know, actors and actresses on this whole, made-for-TV story televised. And so Erin Ashmore plays the lead role of me, which is still so funny to say.
Yeah, I can imagine.
Yeah, so that was 2004. And then really, like, you know, a few years after that, after, you know, the movie hype went down and like that, you know, life, I guess, returned to normal, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. I don't know. I was still doing, you know, every once in a while, like motivational speaking type things. Right. So I actually went to the University of Waterloo. That's where I did my bachelor's degree.
Mm-hmm.
And so I did like a talk there. I've done talks at high schools. I've done talks at some elementary schools and things like that. So I was doing that kind of stuff over the years. And, So then in the last few years, there's been even more development. So now, originally it was called Prom Queen, the musical. Now it's called The Louder We Get. And so at the end of, I think it was like 2009, 2010, Mary, the producer of the movie, called me up, and I was working at the University of Waterloo at the time. I remember it was my lunch break and she called me saying, oh, hey, we haven't talked in a while. And me and Ken Staines, who's the writer of the made-for-TV movie, she said they were both talking about how they want to do something else with my story because they think it's important. And they asked me, what do you think about the idea of doing a musical? And my initial reaction was to laugh
because
I was like, what? Are you serious? A musical? That's awesome. I couldn't even believe it. And so it took a few years to get the ball rolling for that. But uh, in 2014, we had our first kind of workshop version of Prom Queen the Musical, which is kind of, the workshop version is really just like a reading of like the dialogue, a showcase of some of the songs. People are up at the podiums reading. It's not like choreographed or anything like that, really. But that was in 2014 at Sheridan College, mm-hmm. as part of the Canadian Musical Theatre Project. And from there, yeah, it's had a lot of iterations, but we've had three big productions. One, the first, the world premiere was in Montreal, the Steele Center for Performing Arts in 2016. In 2018, it was part of the high school project at the Grand Theatre in London, Ontario. And then most recently, it was actually just in Calgary, which is where I currently live, in January and February for a month-long run. And yeah, it's just been absolutely incredible.
How does it feel to see your story on a stage like that and see so many people attending and being impacted by
it? Well, honestly, the response has just been so incredible.
Good.
And because a lot of people, well, even like, you know, when this was first starting, even, you know, with the Montreal performance, some people were commenting or asking, you know, this story happened in 2002, do you think it's still relevant? And we're all like, yeah, it's the same things are happening today, which is of course totally unfortunate. We've made a lot of progress from 2002, don't get me wrong, but obviously it's still work to be done. And the response for each production that we've had has just been incredible. So, you know, for the Siegel Center for Performing Arts, we had a sold out run where they had to add four extra shows. We had school board trustees actually getting the Siegel Center to create their own like performance so they could fill the theater with their students. For the London, Ontario performance, it was actually high school students that put on the production, and they were mentored by all the professionals, which was so emotional and amazing. And, you know, students at that production were coming up or messaging me on social media and things like that, saying they saw the show and they decided they wanted to come out to their parents because of being inspired by the production. Here in Calgary, it was the highest rated production in the last 5 years at Theatre Calgary. It was so well attended. We got praise from artists like Jan Arden were tweeting about it.
Wow.
Mark Tewksbury and like Mayor Nenshi. And it was, yeah, the response has been so overwhelmingly positive. And yeah, it's been incredible. So many, primarily I would say young people, but a lot of, you know, like older people, it resonates with them. But a lot of them are saying, you know, this feels like kind of like a my high school experience, not necessarily maybe the prom and stuff like that, but there's like, the musical itself isn't just focused on my prom story. It's also about like teenage love and coming out. And there's also discussion about suicide and like things like that. And so there's a lot of different themes and a lot of people resonate with that. And so, yeah.
That's incredible to be able to reach people through a musical like that is something I think that's super rare and just so positive.
Yeah, it's been awesome. And
now,
you know, especially with the, oh, sorry.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was gonna say, especially with the Theatre Calgary project, like it's been great, all the productions, because I've been pretty involved in like doing media and things like that leading up to it. But you know, with Montreal and the Grand Theatre of London, I could really only do like a few days. But here at Theatre Calgary, because I live in Calgary, I could really be a part of all of it. So really getting to know the cast, getting to see the rehearsal process, getting to attend. I was invited to most of their Q&As and stuff because it's I can imagine it's different to be like, oh, here's the guy that the musical is about. You can ask him whatever you want, right? And so it's been a lot of fun connecting with the community in that way and really connecting with everyone at Theatre Calgary. And it was, it was amazing. Everybody at Theatre Calgary is awesome. Yeah. And it was a great experience. So I'm hoping we'll see what's in the works next, but fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. The Mark Hall story is pivoting again. Who knows what it'll be next?
Oh my gosh, it's so wild, but I'm just so grateful, and I'm so happy to be able to continue to share the story even 18 years later.
That's amazing. Now, I know you mentioned that the environment's changed. It's a lot more accepting now for young kids who are coming out. Do you think the emergence of shows like RuPaul's Drag Race that have entered really the mainstream in the past like couple years have contributed to making a more accepting environment for young LGBTQ2S people?
I think absolutely. So, you know, we see a lot of, you know, when I compare now to 2002, you know, RuPaul is a great example. There's also, you know, back in 2002, there was no such thing as gay straight alliances in school, right? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And now we have, you know, a lot of provinces that have legislation saying that schools need to have gay straight alliances. You know, we have a lot more kind of visibility out there.
Right.
Which I think is awesome. And, you know, as much as we've, I do want to kind of have a, what's the word? Like a note to that is, even though we've progressed since 2002, there's still so much more work to be done.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though there's gay straight alliance legislation, legislation's still being attacked.
Yeah.
You know, there's still the discriminatory gay blood ban and things like that. But I think
mm-hmm.
we're doing a lot of awesome work. Right now, you know, the most recent, I guess, I could think about is, you know, now municipalities and provinces and hopefully the federal government soon are working on just banning conversion therapy. Calgary just voted to ban conversion therapy last week.
Finally.
Which is awesome. And so a lot more. Yeah, I know. Finally. Right. Like, yeah. And so it's great. So I think we've gone a long way. Absolutely. And I think we have a lot more representation, but I do think, of course, a lot more work needs to be done. But mm-hmm. I think socially we're inching our way there.
Getting there. Are there any issues right now facing the LGBTQ2S community that are unique to right now that maybe you weren't seeing in the early 2000s?
I guess one of the things that pops into mind is, again, in 2002, you know, trans visibility wasn't even
mm-hmm.
that big. And I think now today, even though it is, we're still fighting for LGBTQ plus communities in general. I think there's a lot of visibility with transgender people, which is amazing
mm-hmm.
and great. And I'm so for that. And so, not that it wasn't an issue before, what I'm saying is now it's like so much more visible. I'm glad that we're all kind of fighting kind of this section out, if that makes any sense.
Definitely. I mean, it's been an interesting day today, actually. The Catholic School Board in Waterloo declared that they'll not be flying the pride flag during the month of June. Now, is this surprising for you, or are you seeing similar patterns maybe out in Alberta where you are?
Yes, that's unfortunate.
Yeah.
You know what? It's still frustrating because mm-hmm. even though it's been 18 years since I don't want to say incident because that sounds small, but you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Since my court battle and everything, you'd think we've gone so far and then you see things like this. And so this is what I mean, that even though we have progressed a lot, we still have so much more to do. And so, you know, it's unfortunate because all the LGBTQ plus people who are attending Catholic schools should be aware that they're supported.
Mm-hmm.
And when you do things like, you know, not participate in pride or not bring that visibility forward, mm-hmm. it sends a negative message to the students. And help those students know that there are people out there that support them.
Yeah, exactly. I think that's so important for them to know. Something as mm-hmm. trivial as putting, not even trivial, but as small as putting up a pride flag is
exactly,
still being
right?
deliberated like, right now.
Yeah, it's outrageous. And, actually, do you have time for a side story?
Yeah, of course.
So, in 2018, when we were doing, it was still then called Prom Queen the Musical, but so Prom Queen the Musical was part of the high school project at the Grand Theater in Ontario. And, but they are again mentored by all the professionals at the Grand Theater. And so
mm-hmm.
the high school students apply to be the actors and the actresses, but they also apply to be backstage learning how to do like set design and lighting and things like that.
That's
costumes.
Fantastic.
And so they're all mentored by the professionals, but because it's not a regular production and it's really more like a mentorship kind of program thing, there is a significant budget for mm-hmm. this. And so they do most of it through fundraising and things like that. But two of their primary sources of funding come from the public and Catholic school boards. And typically every year, both the public and both the Catholic school boards each donate $15,000.
Mm-hmm.
So it makes up $30,000 of the budget, which is quite significant. And when they So I was at work at the University of Calgary. And I'm sitting in my office. And I get a phone call from the producer saying, just FYI, CBC is going to call you in 10 minutes because both of the school boards have pulled their funding for the high school project.
Wow.
And I was sitting in my office like, what? I was so shocked. Yeah. Like, what are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And really it was like these feelings from 2002. Like, what do you mean? And so I guess what happened was both of the directors of education read the script and they said that the musical puts administration in a bad light, even though it's based on a true story and it's what actually happened.
Yeah.
And that, you know, the themes are just not appropriate for the high school project. Meanwhile, if we look at previous projects that they funded, they did things like Les Miserables, Guys and Dolls, like all these musicals or productions have some pretty heavy themes.
Oh, right? For sure.
So we're like, what? Okay. So I actually had to like leave work to deal with the media. Basically to get my reactions to the mm-hmm. schools they were funding. And I mean, I can't say that I was entirely shocked by the Catholic school board, but I was definitely shocked with the public. And so it was that night a company in London, Ontario, Art Traction, started a GoFundMe.
Wow.
And in 24 hours we had made up the $30,000. And in 48 hours, it doubled to $60,000. And this was people, a lot primarily from the London community, but really across Canada. We had the producers from Come From Away donate like $2,018. This was 2018. Wow. Rick Mercer donated. Like so many people from around the community, a lot of people in the theater and arts community. And it was just honestly so powerful because I think one of the things for us is we were worried what message, again, it would send to the students. That mm-hmm. now both of these boards pulled funding, but it's also high school students that are coming from these schools to do this play. Do you know what I mean? Where we're like, mm-hmm. oh, what message does that send? And then really this like community mobilization coming together really says, you know what, people support you. This is mm-hmm. awesome. And then there was so much public pressure. And another side note is that I guess it wasn't the trustees didn't make these decisions.
Yeah.
The decision was made without the trustees, and so a lot of the trustees and the public board were angry about it. And so the public school in the end ended up reversing their decision. So it ended up working really well for the high school project, and mm-hmm. that was great.
That's great to see that Canada just banded together around this whole project to help save it. That must have meant a lot to you, too.
Oh, it was amazing. It was... Wow. Honestly, totally reminiscent of 2002 when everybody came together to help support me. And this time they really came together to help support, you know, not only the story, but of course, primarily the high school students, which was mm-hmm. very powerful and very awesome. Yeah.
That's fantastic. Well, conveniently, today is June 1st, which marks the beginning of Pride Month.
Yay, happy Pride!
Usually this month consists of, you know, tons of public events that celebrate the LGBTQ+ community. However, due to the pandemic, many of the large events, such as Pride parades that take place across the country, have been canceled. Mm-hmm. What can people keep doing to celebrate Pride Month throughout the lockdown? Because it's super important that we, you know, keep acknowledging it, even though I think so many people look forward to like the milestone big parade in Toronto, for example. But what can we do to keep talking about LGBTQ+ issues throughout the lockdown?
Absolutely. And I think that's a great point because a lot of people do celebrate in that way. Mm-hmm. Attending these large events, going to prides and things like that, or pride parades. Mm-hmm. And I think it's, you know, maintaining that visibility. I always love June 1st because everybody starts posting on Facebook and mm-hmm. Instagram, happy pride and things like that. And so I think a lot of people are doing, you know, a lot of online virtual sessions now, you know, online drag shows, community mm-hmm. events where people are physically distant, but they can go see, you know, a show on their lawn. I don't know if you've seen one of those things, but in Calgary, we actually have, remember what it's called exactly, but you can hire the drag queens wow. like come to your street and do a performance for your street and things like that.
That's right? Amazing.
Yeah, it's really awesome. And so I think it's like things like that. We have to be able to you know, change a little bit the ways in which we do things for now, especially mm-hmm. among the pandemic. But I think people are being extremely creative in how to do that. And I think a lot of people are gonna be celebrating, albeit, you know, in a bit of a different virtual fashion maybe this year, but I think I think it's great for people to continue talking about it and things like that.
Great. Now, if you could pass on some words of encouragement to anyone in the LGBTQ plus community who are struggling with sadness or anxiety about the cancellation of many Pride events, what would they be?
I think the biggest thing is to remember to stay connected. And mm-hmm. so even though we might not be able to meet physically in person, we can reach out to somebody over email or over Facebook mm-hmm. or over the phone and things like that. And so, you know, if you are feeling isolated, just remember that there are people out there to support you, people out there to help you get through it. I know I've had to do a bunch of virtual meetings with friends and stuff just for myself to feel socially connected again. And so, you know, I think there are ways around it, even if you can't meet face to face as of right now. But, you know, just know that there is support out there for sure.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, Mark, and sharing your story. It was so fantastic to talk to you.
Awesome. Thank you. This is great. Thank you for having me.
Keep well and stay safe and happy Pride.
Happy Pride. Happy Pride, everyone. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Mark. Take care.
You too.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
In Conversation with Radio Laurier is written and produced by Amelia Mola-Schmidt. The song that we use is called Work by Kevin MacLeod. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.